Welcome to, I don't even feel like saying it, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
Just feels wrong. I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking season 3, episode 2, Game Changer. It's supposed to feel wrong, Aaron. I didn't like it either when Ed refused to say it, but that's how it goes when you're taking off your life's mission. Yeah, we're here to talk about the episode 2 of the season. What'd you think, Aaron?
Man, this is a roller coaster of emotions, because at first I'm like, you know, it's kind of a bummer for Danielle, but she is like, you know, being super professional and also letting Ed know that he's on notice. She's coming after him. And I like the, you know, camaraderie there. And then I think Margo made a bad call. I think there's a lot of different ways you could handle if you wanted to phase out the head of the astronauts department or whatever Molly is. But I think she picked about the worst way possible. And it's going to cause a lot of probably dissension within the astronaut ranks. And I don't know. It does seem like a naked power hungry grab from her. And I didn't like it. I didn't like seeing all the chaos and disorder that was from that decision. But it's dramatically interesting. Mm-hmm. The other thing is this Karen shit, man. what the hell is wrong with this woman? Why couldn't she let that boy walk out the door without asking him about his goddamn wedding music? What's her fucking deal?
I wanted to know. I'm sure she doubly wanted to know. We talked about this last episode, right? Like, was this intentional? Was this? And his like, oh, Amber wanted to do it. Yeah, bullshit. We all knew that was bullshit. And then, of course,
he should have never been put in a position to be asked. That was such a such a needy, stupid decision by Karen. Oh my god.
Yeah, I'm with you. I knew immediately when I saw that. I'm like, oh boy, Aaron's gonna have a real problem with what's happening here. I really like the stuff with Ayessa and Helios. This stuff is super interesting because I think we are conditioned, or certainly I'm conditioned, to see someone with a massive amount of money and assume that there is no proper sharing of those funds, that there is that they've done something to exploit people to get it. Mm-hmm. That when they get the opportunity, they're going to exploit the fact that they have it to get more.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy doesn't seem to be that guy, but I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop on that. So it's fascinating to me, like, to see a totally different type of corporation here from what we're used to seeing. And seeing Karen get caught up in it and kind of like thinking that she's found an alternative way of living life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be fascinating as we go through this season, especially when the going gets tough.
I got to echo your admiration for how they're doing this Helios thing, because it seems like it's an intentional comparison to Elon Musk, right?
100%. Yeah.
And down to the fact that they're both African-American immigrants.
Oh,
but
okay.
Then everything starts to divulge. Like, this guy's father was a penniless immigrant. Elon Musk, his dad owned the Ruby mine. Elon Musk is very set a cult of personality around himself. This guy might as well, but definitely the buck stops with him, and he's not super duper sharing in terms of decision making, glory, or anything like that. This guy is all about Harambe and Ubuntu and all these principles of sharing and communal responsibility. Almost like the best of both worldviews presented by the Americans and the Soviets on the show. And there's no fucking way this guy can be this fucking based.
Right.
There's no way. Right. There's no way.
We'll see. I'm super intrigued. And man, they're setting up some really great stuff with this race to Mars. It makes me wonder, like, are they going to cut corners to get there? Especially now that they have a mission commander who Margo didn't want, because his potential to cut corners and to play it fast and loose, like, that could be a dangerous equation.
I don't know how Ed's going to fit into this organization as stated.
That,
the
yeah.
mission, the fact that he's just going to be a glorified caretaker by design, like, whoo, I don't know.
Yeah, Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know. That stuff is super interesting. I'm also interested in the Ellen stuff, you know, as she runs for president here. She's having to choose her VP. And I don't know about this guy. He's saying the right things, but he seems very disingenuous.
He's exactly the same as Black Elon. Like, sure. There's no way this guy with the background he's given is going to be this base. There's no way he's not going to, like, stab Ellen in the back. And
yeah.
I can already see the shape of what it would be. Like, you know, he's going to find out that she's gay, and he's going to see that as a breach of their shoot straight etiquette and something that she blindsided him with, quote unquote. And it's going to be the rationale that he needs to turn against her, especially since she's already soft on his pro-life causes because she's all for stem cells. So, like, there's all this apparent harmony and Harambe going on in this episode, but like, you can already see the cracks underneath it, where the fault lines are going to be, where people are really going to be tested. It's great. The only quibbles I had in the first episode were like some of the scientific details of the space disaster and the fact that they've used that so well to like propel the rest of the it seems clear that there's no way these guys are going to be able to beat NASA a whole 2 years in their launch window.
Right.
But the fact that they even can is kind of audacious. Or maybe it makes NASA and the Soviets, and I think the Chinese are going to get into this race too. Maybe they all are accelerated to like a more dangerous degree.
Could be.
I don't know. It's a fascinating setup for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it was, right? There's no big crazy event that happens at the end of this. The event is the announcement, right? That they're going to be there 2 years before NASA. If it goes according to plan. But I don't know. It was still exciting for me, even though it was an action-packed episode.
And I felt like, maybe not action, but there was definitely some fist pump moments. Because like Molly in the bathtub smoking a joint from her little, you know, her roach clip saying, yeah, Ed, stick it to him. That was such a great ending to this episode.
Yeah, she's great. I wonder what we're going to see of her in the future. She doesn't really have a very prominent place in the series at this point, right?
Man, I hope that they don't forget about her. I wonder if they'll bring her in as some kind of mission command, like not mission commander, but mission controller.
Bring her over to Helios.
Like, Helios might be this weird thing where like the company culture is an antithesis of NASA, but their selling point is they're retaining the astronaut culture.
Yeah.
Where NASA is going to be this more bureaucratic, you know, top down oppressive thing, and their astronauts are just replaceable cogs that don't have any say. It's kind of cool how they are playing with contrasts this season, because I think and if they wanted to be like an astronaut first organization, bringing Molly over, but that's a pain in the ass too, right? Because she is a pain in the ass.
Sure. I don't know. We'll see. Why don't we get into the recap? All right. News of the Polaris hotel tragedy has made it out to the news outlets, and it's on the radio. Karen's driving to meet Ayessa in the desert. Once there, Ayessa offers to buy out Polaris. Karen kind of sits here for a while talking to him and smokes out why he's going to make a run at Mars, and he needs her hotel / ship. Maybe we can talk about that to get there. He says all the right things and they make a deal. Hotel / ship is a weird thing to me. I guess it makes a certain amount of sense, but her
what
hotel,
is a starship?
Sure, if not just like a metal container with air inside.
I think like, you just defined it with an engine on one end, preferably.
Right, if it can move. Yeah, and I guess like, as long as your engines aren't too powerful and stress the hotel in the wrong places, you should be good. Her hotel, though, is in shambles, or does she have another?
No, I think it's still the hotel, but like, I think it would probably be easier to repair that thing and make it space worthy than to build an entirely new structure to go to Mars.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the testing is already done, right? You just need to test now. Can we put propulsion on this thing?
Right.
But yeah,
you'd have to string up two new cables and maybe tighten up some bolts and whatnot. But there's a lot of precedent in science fiction, you know, and the Expanse. We featured a starship becoming doing the reverse. So you had something that was a starship became a star base when it got spun up. So this is kind of like that in reverse.
Can they spin the hotel?
Spin the Polaris. No, I that wasn't the only thing, because I kind of like noted that irony of the reversal of the Naboo plotline of the Expanse, but also them talking about colonizing Mars, colonizing the moons of Jupiter and Saturn. It's like I started hearing Norwegian women singing, you know, in the background, the Expanse theme.
The other thing about the scene is I'm trying to decipher what she's feeling about this. You know, she has a ton of money, but she doesn't have her business anymore. And I'm just wondering, is she okay with that, right? Like, is money what she's actually after? Because she's very good at making money off her business ventures. What she's not great at is finding fulfillment in them. And I think that's, you know, a theme that we're going to see through the rest of this episode, especially when she gets in contact with Ed, who's feeling the same. She's searching for something that is not money here.
Fulfillment, a bright new future, a next page. That's all very interesting questions.
Yeah. And then she's, you know, kind of looking out, contemplating that into the desert here. And it's supposed to be, you know, similar to a Mars landscape, right? With minus the plants.
Yeah.
She's thinking about Mars. She's just thinking about her own role in this and how she's just kind of sold it out here.
Very, very Jurassic Park. I thought this scene, this is very Hammond arriving by helicopter to tell Grant that his next 2 years of research have been fully funded. And I guess I'd be remiss as a Cincinnatian if I didn't remark upon Harambe. You know, most people, that word became famous for the king of our fair cities, Zoo, being slain because a mom let her kid wander into his cage. Like, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. It's been gone 6 years. Rest in peace, Harambe. Hopefully, the Harambe situation goes a lot better and for all mankind.
I would hope so. And like I said, you know, kind of in the intro, I'm liking this guy so far, right? He's saying all the right things. I'm interested to see if it stays that way as we get further in, but so far so good on this dude.
Yeah, so far it's interesting. Ron Moore's statement seems to be, if you have a super rich dude taking us to the stars, he better be like a really benevolent dictator type, first among equals type. He's saying all the right things. We'll see when the rubber hits the road. Mm-hmm.
All right, then we go over to Molly, who is angry that Margot has snuck a committee behind her back to choose this Mars mission commander. She barges into her office and takes her anger out on Margot's assistants because she's not there. And she calls Danielle into her office and tells her, look, I know you're qualified for a Mars mission. It just won't be the first one. Ed's going up there. She tries to explain her reasoning. And Danielle, to her credit, agrees to back him up. She doesn't put up too much of a fight here.
What's your analysis of the political situation here? And I'm not talking politics in terms of Republicans and Democrats. I'm talking office politics. Margot versus Molly. Who's in the right? Who's in the wrong?
It's hard to say because we've taken a big break, right? So we haven't seen the real development of this. If I had seen more of Margot's actions, like, is this something she's actually doing behind the scenes, trying to get in underneath Molly? Or above Molly to try and change the structure of NASA. I don't know. We don't have enough information really, but my read on it is that Molly is right here. And that sneaking this into some clause buried in a contract or some paperwork that she's supposed to sign without telling her that that's what she's doing is, yeah, it's underhanded.
Yeah, especially since we've seen Margot handle usurpation of her power by the Department of Defense, and like she understands the territoriality that, like, if you have budget, if you have responsibilities, if you have official duties, you have to protect them, or they'll be taken from you and reappropriated other places, and like. It's entirely possible that Molly and the whole astronaut head office is a relic of the past, but it seems like if you want to do that, you should make that argument and then formally dissolve the position. You shouldn't do it mm-hmm. after you've provoked her by trying to take that power. And that's exactly what this is.
If I think so.
It's handcuffing her to a set of criteria that this board can use to force her hand to make decisions that she doesn't want to do. And as Ed points out later in the episode, the whole point of this is to make sure the nerds on the ground that have never been strapped to a rocket with 100,000 pounds of thrust and ride it into orbit, that they don't get to override the concerns of the men and women who actually crew the thing and who are putting their ass on the line. And I was pretty outraged by Margot's behavior throughout this episode and kind of worried that there would be a coup amongst the astronauts. I didn't expect it would immediately lead to Ed, defecting to the private sector. But
yeah, that's all diffused.
She fucked around and she found out.
And there's an argument to be had, you know, that scientists and engineers should be leading the space charge here, but also that could significantly slow things down, right? Scientists and engineers are not prone to risk-taking.
Right. Especially when you're talking about true exploration, true breaking new grounds, things that are not routine. And the thing is like, it's a very interesting argument. Who would be the better mission commander, Danny or Ed? Danielle or Ed? Even you leave out all the other, like, what it means for the first human being on the planet to be a black woman. If you set aside all the racial politics of it, it's an entirely defensible decision, and I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. But clearly, by tradition and explicit NASA policy, Molly was the one that had that decision and was the ultimate, that's where the ultimate buck stopped. And they just Margot just threw that result out because she didn't like it. And it's clear to me that nothing, like if Molly had, you know, done it all through the proper channels, which again, to the extent that Molly was fucking over Margot, it's just returning of the favor what Margot had done with her with this stupid, you know, she issues this edict and this policy and buries this poison pill in it and then takes off to Huntsville. You know, I just think it was Molly responding to that aggression that Margot is already showing, and she's in the right. If Margot wanted to redo this as NASA administrator, she should have. Like, I think the proper way to do it, if you fucking hated Molly, was like, all right, you're going to get Ed, but now you're fired. That's your last decision you ever made. But like,
yeah, or God. Maybe not even fired. You're just, you know, now you're operating under this committee. Like, let the decision stand, but in the future. Right.
And if you don't like it, you can walk out, but you are no longer the final say, and we are changing the policy because blah, blah, blah. But, like, it seemed like horseshit to me. It seemed like something that was designed to piss people off. And it sucks so bad because I wanted Ed to fall in line and, like, accept it the way Danny. But I feel like it's a fundamental difference. Like, Ed's a clown for bringing her race and gender into it.
Oh yeah.
But he's entirely right to be upset by the way he's been treated.
Uh-huh. Sure.
So
he's been given something and then they took it back and it's like he's been jerked around quite a bit. The other thing about it is, you know, Ed specifically as a commander here, the guy being jerked around is an interesting case when you're talking about, like, will engineers and scientists make the better decisions here, or will the cowboy fighter pilots make the better decisions? He had the opportunity to do just that, right, on that Apollo 10 mission, and he chose to side with the scientists and engineers who were saying, look, you don't have enough fuel, or you're within, like, a margin of error here that makes this scary. You get the call, though. And he decides to take it back, right? So he doesn't land on the moon.
And I wonder if he'll ever do that again, though. I wonder if Margot wonders the same thing. If, like, if we really need to, like, go no go him, and we're all saying no go, and Ed's like, "Well, I'm old. I'll never get this chance again. I'm going."
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's a valid fear. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Totally. He's an interesting case, being the person in this position. But I don't know. I mean, look, also, our current NASA is run by a bunch of scientists and engineers, right? And I think a lot of us would like the progress to be a little bit faster. And, you know, you talked about this CIESA guy being essentially Elon Musk. I mean, that's what he's doing, right? Moving fast, breaking things. He'll let $100 million rocket explode because he's trying to land this thing vertical, whatever. If it doesn't work, he'll build another. NASA has to worry about the politics of it and then the budgets that they are constrained by because of the politics. Whereas he doesn't. He can just have a cowboy out there breaking his rockets.
Well, and I was thinking the same thing as like Ed, like that's the flip side of the weenies in the white lab coats is like the astronauts are ones that charge ahead, make all the hard decisions. If Ed tries to land Apollo 10 and it blows up, NASA is the one that has to deal with the public relations fallout and the budget cuts. Molly, you know, disobeys orders and pushes to get that the a little bit more exploration to get that ice in that first canyon. And it worked, but if it didn't, it's a dead astronaut. And why are we even fucking around on the moon? So, like, there is a push and pull of interest on both sides because, yeah, they're putting their asses on the line, but the program, the existence of the program is on the administrators and not on the astronauts. So they they can only pay a certain, they can only pay for their own lives. They can't, like, you know, they can't single-handedly keep a mission going or keep a department funded.
I have to think this is also a little bit about Molly making the sacrifice she did for when she was on the moon and now the price she's paying for that. Like, I think she puts a lot of value into the autonomy of those astronauts being able to make their own calls.
Sure.
Being capable of it, being willing to, because of the experiences she's had on the moon.
Yeah.
You know, it is who she is, and she's put her money where her mouth is on that. And I think she feels very strongly that that should be the type of person they're looking for in the commander.
And again, especially like when you're first boots on the ground on a strange new world, you know, like I said, it's a debate, it's an argument, and I feel like there was a set of rules that governed that debate, and Margot just changed them because she didn't like the result. Which, that's the thing. Like, I guess if I was ever in an employment situation, and I've been in employment situations like this, where like I got the feeling that I couldn't fire somebody who was a dumpster fire, I fucking fired him. And like, if I'm gonna find out I can't be allowed to do that, I'd rather find out now than like 3 years from now. So we can get this shit settled right now. I kind of like supported Molly provoking the argument. It's like, okay, well, let's push our chips in the middle of the table. And, you know, are you taking my power? Are you usurping this or not? And Margot did it. So,
yeah. All right. Well, the next scene is Ed leading a class when Molly shows up and announces he's no longer the teacher because he's being assigned the commander position on the first Mars mission. And Ed is blown away. He gets a standing ovation from his class too, which is nice.
Very cute scene.
And then we go over to Karen packing up her office at Polaris when Danny shows up. Da, da, da. They chat
briefly.
This is
not a cute scene.
They chat briefly about what happened on the Polaris, both the accident and the song he played at the wedding reception. He claims it was all Amber's idea, but then at the last minute, as he's walking out, he confesses he lied about that and he's still in love with Karen. Karen sets him straight and sends him home to his wife. But how can you really set this boy straight?
Yeah, and we hear it's caught up in some of the stuff we missed in the last 10 years, him drunkenly showing up at her house at all hours and being possessive and probably aggressive. And
yeah, the drinking problem.
But why did Karen, because like, why couldn't she let that boy leave her office without satisfying her own curiosity? There's got to be something, some kind of hold on her. The fact that she ever let it happen to begin in the first place, like, oh, God, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of people are pieces of work on this show. But I feel like Karen takes the cake right now for inappropriateness and then the disbelief that she's having to deal with the consequences of her inappropriateness. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I hope this kid goes to Mars. I hope he dies on Mars because I can't take this. I cannot. I cannot give a shit about these two people. No.
Wow. Unrequited love. You heard it here first. The punishment for that is death on Mars.
For this particular, yeah. Yeah. I'd rather send Karen, but I will take Danny as is if whatever it takes to end this.
Hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff I admire about Karen and the person she is.
Sure. But
this is not one of those things.
It's a lot of things I admire about Margot. She's dead wrong to fuck over Molly this way. Karen is dead wrong for all of this. And she
Speaking of being dead wrong, there was mention of perhaps a quadriplegic Danny theory last
I was
episode.
Dead wrong.
He's walking like as I was going to say like the day he was born, but no, he's walking like a few years later.
That would kind of be quadriplegic because babies don't walk.
Yeah.
I'm kind of flabbergasted. I guess that was just for a mini cliffhanger.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah, just knock him off the ship and make you think, oh no, he's dead.
The cable fiascos even less now because that was dumb. That's dumb. I didn't like it.
Okay. How about this thing about Danny thinking that Karen wants to get back with Ed? Is there anything to that? Is he right?
I think if I were in Ed and Karen's positions at this phase in life, you would be a natural thing to think about rekindling. But yeah. Ed's going to Mars, man.
Both freshly single. Yeah, it kind of doesn't matter, right? He's going to be on Mars in 2 years if all goes according to plan.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I have no idea what they're doing with this because it seems like it's all going to be super fucking moot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. So we're over in Austin where Ellen and her husband, I don't know his name.
I don't either.
Talked through her vice presidential pick. She's interested in John McCain, which I think all of us are familiar with. But this dude, her husband, thinks she should pick someone that her base likes more, which is Bragg. I don't think this is a real guy. I think this is a made-up dude so that they can show him and have him be a character.
Yep.
And she agrees to take a meeting with him, but that's all. And then their son bursts in the room and plays with them. There are so many really cute scenes between people. I really love this scene where Ellen and this dude are playing with their kid. I really love the next scene where Ed and Danielle are just shooting the shit and busting balls. Yep. Everybody is so cute together. And it's in contrast, you know, to the Karen Danny stuff, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, like everything about Danielle's family experience is very cute. And I like this about the show is that they do show wholesome family dynamics with the fucking exception of Karen. Like even Ed losing his shit at Kelly and Karen last a year in the third episode, I thought was handled extremely well and well played by all family members involved. And like, you know, like that's the thing, like they've established that Ellen and her husband here love each other in every single way, except for one facet. And that's a big facet. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. They're not romantically interested in each other.
But they're like, I mean, this kid looks he's super cute. Seems very well adjusted. They're having a really normal one here in the bedroom. It seems like she's just completely both of these people completely shut that part of their body, their life fulfillment away to advance themselves in politics. But they're trying to get as much of the other human experience as possible.
Mm-hmm.
What a wild way to live your life because of the country you're born in, but
right and the time that you're born in.
Yeah, yeah. And I because like Cecily and I were talking about when we're watching this, she's like, I'm surprised that, you know, the other gender and the like hierarchical dynamics that they've shown because the USSR keeps coming around and challenging the United States in terms of women's involvement and racial problems that the gay stuff lags behind. And I thought about that and I'm like, well, that's the thing is like, Russia's not really pushing the United States on their acceptance of gay people. I think that's when the USSR suffered from a lot of that as well. So like, yes, things are a little bit more progressive from women's empowerment and maybe racial, you're slightly ahead of where we were in real life racially. But in terms of gay rights, it's not like Russia's putting any pressure on us. So I thought it's almost realistic that segment or that axis is kind of lagging behind everything else.
Yeah. And I saw in the, intro montage last episode that the AIDS epidemic was still a thing in this universe. And we know how that was handled here, right? And who that was blamed on.
Right.
Who was demonized for that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like that has changed much. So we'll see if we get there. Ed and Danielle talk for the first time since Molly made him the commander, and she congratulates him, but warns him, I will steal your seat in a heartbeat if he isn't perfect. And Hi Bob is back. That's nice.
Yeah. Hi Bob, we did do it. It's not a complete abandonment of the Hi Bob. I felt bad when it's like, Jesus, two episodes into episode by episode coverage and the show repudiates our podcast title. Oh my God. But what are you going to do?
Yeah. Like I said, I really like this scene. I like them together.
Talking about essentially a Tesla Roadster in 1994, 95, or 92. He's talking about like this all electric Roadster he's got that can go 0 to 60 in like 3.3 seconds or something. And
yeah. Way faster than this Corvette.
I love this because it's Danielle essentially saying she's going to do her part, but also putting Ed on notice that she's coming. Like if he shows any sign of weakness, his bum fucking leg, his prostate getting weak, what she's going to come, her and the whole replacement crew is going to come for him, which is, you know, game on, man. That's fair.
Sure. Then Ed calls Kelly via video phone on the moon. In her Antarctic base via video phone to tell her some good news and some bad news. He's splitting up with Yvonne, which is, I guess, the bad news, but also going to Mars. And she's super happy for him. He asks her to come with him. She's not certain she wants to go because she'd have to put her research on hold, but he eventually convinces her. Didn't seem like it took much. And of course, come on. Like, I get that you like your research, but being one of the first people on Mars.
This is another cute scene because that's the thing. It's like, even he, like at the end, he's like, come on. And she's like, well, of course I'm going to go because of course you're going to go.
Right.
But I like him mispronouncing the swingalingus fungus that she's working on, the smoomaxis. Just bring your swingalingus on. Well, we need to figure out how to make that thing grow on Mars. I was going to say, I do wonder where they're going with this, because like by the end of this episode, this conversation's moot. So,
yeah, well, maybe. I mean, he could still get her on a mission, right? Just not in the public sector.
Yeah, I wonder how she will feel about that as, you know, a graduate of Annapolis and big defender of the space program. Yeah,
that's the thing. We find out a lot more about her story in the last X amount of years over the break. Because he talks about it, you know, he says, hey, you aced your astronaut training, you went on a trip to Skylab, she's been in space before, she's game ready, you know. We were questioning, like, how did she get diverted from that? But it seems like she didn't. She just kind of got into the research side of things after becoming essentially an astronaut.
Although I wonder if there's more to that story, too. Like, why would someone who wanted to, like we talked about, she was hard charged and wanted to drive the biggest, baddest jet fighters, wanted to go to space, was successful in achieving that. And now, and again, it's not like McMurdo is like some bullshit post. It's very prestigious. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there might be more people who've walked on the moon at this point than served at that base. But it's still, especially in an age of true exploration where Mars is just around the corner, why would she take their foot off the gas?
Yeah, I don't know. You asked last episode if these were Newton devices, Apple Newton devices. They definitely are. So there are Apple icons on them, on the physical device itself. And then if you look at the screen here when she signs off, there's a logo, an icon that says Newton Tour. Like, hey, welcome to your device or whatever. So definitely a Newton. I guess that's predominant technology for video conferencing. From the moon, too. I think Aleta later is using one of these, too, to contact her family. Anyway, Danielle has to tell her husband that she got passed over as mission commander. He says he's sorry, but she thinks he's not sad enough. And he gives his reasons, and I think they're fair. And then her son overhears them chatting, and they talk about it for a while.
No, I thought it's especially like because you know, I was like, well, you knew what you were getting into when you married an astronaut. But he points out that, like, I just lived through a space fucking disaster, a towering inferno up 50 miles high. It's like the trauma is fresh in my mind. And now, like, because he's like, yeah, intellectually knowing the dangers versus living through one, I can, but it's not, and it's not like he's not being supportive. He's just like, I'm not like, as much as I would have been like 2 months ago, you know? And he's thinking, well, it's not like you're not going to go. You're going to go after our sons through high school. And it made a lot of sense. It's, and also, it's funny because what Ed says about Danny, well, you only got ahead of me because you're greased the wheels, is kind of like the inverted of that said by Isaiah here, because he says, oh, it's a big surprise, they're going to the old white guy. There's still like the prejudice on, I think, if you can call it that, on both sides. It's just that Danielle's got the grace not to let her bitterness get to the point where she throws that in Ed's face. And I think she's even kind of reprimanding her son for, you know, or at least disapproving of him for saying that. But it's not like people aren't thinking it, you know, when Ed, you know, it's the first guy gets to be the first guy and he's going to look a certain type of way and have a certain type of. So that I think that's interesting that the they both have some of the similar misgivings that are racially and gender motivated, but Danielle just is not as big an asshole as Ed is.
Yeah. And then we go over to Ellen's political ad. She's running a smear campaign, kind of, on Bill Clinton and saying, he's the taxes. Oh, boy, he's going to raise those taxes. And she takes a meeting with Governor Bragg at her temporary campaign headquarters. She feels him out on whether he can be a team player and advocate for her position despite their differences of opinion. He says all the right things, but does he mean them? Aaron, I can't imagine that he actually means these things he's saying.
Well, you know, it's interesting to see, like, what is the Republican barometer? Because you mentioned it's an attack ad, but it's a pretty tame attack ad. Like, this guy wants to increase our budget by $250 billion. Can we afford that? Say no to tax and spend. You know, those are honest political disagreements. I got my feelings on them, right?
But it's, you know, with the overbearing music and the voice announcer who's like, Bill Clinton taxed your ass out.
Yeah, for sure. But it's not like Bill Clinton fucked a bunch of women in the Arkansas governor's mansion and he wants to, you know, his wife's going to traffic your children in fucking IKEA cabinets and like the shit that we've gotten, we've devolved down to today. And I'm thinking, it's like, okay, what does the Republican Party look like if climate change is not a problem? If society as a whole kind of still reveres science, and you've also got like the jingoism is always at 100% because of our, you know, intense geopolitical conflict with Russia remains a player throughout the
well, you've always got the pro-life always got pro-choice the pro-life debate to fall back on.
That's a big thing. And I think the gay stuff is that I think that's what's going to happen is that he's going to feel entitled to stab Ellen in the back because Ellen wasn't entirely forthcoming and she's been living a lie. That's going to be what he justifies his betrayal as. But
yeah, I mean, maybe he
will be a loyal soldier to the end. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see.
Because that would be an interesting. That also show a little bit of like maybe how the times have changed, because we know Zeke, like when he was up there in a capsule, they thought they're going to die. We thought that was going to be a nice old white guy moment where it's like, you know, I never thought you lesbians were that bad.
He turned out to be an ass.
And he turned out to be just a complete asshole about it. It would be interesting if this is like a reversal of that. A guy who maybe because I thought they were going to go with Zeke being anachronistically cool with gay people because I liked him, right? I don't like this guy from the way they described him, the way he carries himself and all that kind of stuff. But he's saying all the right things. Maybe he will be the guy who actually does the right thing that we don't like and respect. I don't know. There might be an interesting inversion there.
Yeah, she's so established in her cover life here that it's hard to imagine exactly how that comes out. But I think a big key player is going to be the woman that she was seeing last season. I don't remember her name.
That's her one that got away, right? The one that she was just
she gave
super
her
in love with.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess Yeah, I don't know who gave up who. I can't remember exactly. It was complicated. But yeah, they gave up that relationship for her to pursue her career.
So I think that's it's going to be a situation like that where she meets someone that she can't resist, that the heart wants,
Well, I think it's probably digging up her past, right? And they're going to go. Well,
I was
going to
say it could be a dark thing, or is like her girlfriend is like, I don't want someone to be the president who's got this big secret that they're keeping. Revenge is more of like, I don't think this person's fit to serve, or I don't think this person should. I don't know. I don't know how they would spin it that way, but yeah.
Sure.
I can see it going down a lot of different ways for sure.
Yeah, we'll see. Marga returns to her office and Bill unintentionally drops the bomb about Ed being the commander on her. And she diverts straight to Molly's office, where Molly rips into her about trying to take control over the entire agency with her underhanded tactics. And rather than take the criticism to heart, Margo fires Molly. What's done is now undone.
Your blind refusal to see these facts, Molly.
God yeah, damn, I just continue your sentence. She knows you didn't mean to pick on her visual or impairment, whatever.
I think I just add to the true, because she's like, that's because Margot is not a stupid person. She knows what she's doing. She knows what her clear pattern has been for these last 30 years. And yeah, I just, boy. I just can't get behind what Margot's doing here. This is such a horseshit. I thought when I was watching this for the first time, I was like, oh, this is going to set off like an almost astronaut revolt, you know, because this is like I started thinking about this in terms of like, this is like a labor issue, right? You know, imagine if you're like a coal miner and you've had a coal miner that is sitting on the employee board. And they're the head of it, and they get to approve like working condition things and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you got that because you trust them to make the decisions that you don't trust the bean counters. And then all of a sudden they strip that or de-unionize it or something. Like that would be like that's not pro labor for damn sure. So like I saw this as almost like dissolving a union. It's a naked power grab by management. I did not like it at all.
Yeah, I'm with you. Of course, Margo, having done this, needs to now call Ed into her office to tell him the bad news that he won't be commanding the Mars mission. Ed is pissed off that the decisions are being made by pencil pushers now. Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked in large part about this at the beginning when we first saw Molly make this decision. But I don't know, man, is it good or bad that the pencil pushers, the engineers, the scientists are taking control of this? Because on one hand, I could see a case for that, right? They're the people with the knowledge to actually make this mission safe and get the job
done. The whole reason this job got started is because these weenies in white lab coats barbecued three astronauts on the fucking launch pad, including Gus Grissom, first U.S. man in space, right? Like, this didn't happen because these ballsy astronauts came in and started, like, giving purple nurples and pink bellies to all the nerds and, like, bullying them and, like, you fucking eggheads. And no, it was careless mistakes that led to people dying needlessly. So, like, I'm 100% pro-astronaut on this issue. Ed would have played this perfectly had he left Danielle's sex and gender out of his bitterness and resentment.
Oh, sure.
And it's a cheap shot. He probably knew it. And it's going to permanently damage him and Danielle's relationship. In fact, I was actually somewhat surprised that Danielle was cool with it. You know, like,
cool with it?
Cool with the way that the change was made.
Oh, you know? Okay.
Yeah. I understand, like, you know, being elated, but like, this is a huge culture change, and I think it's something that I would be worried about if I was an astronaut. But maybe Danielle, since she is more the cerebral mold that has the extra qualifications, it's becoming more than just a test pilot. Maybe she is more sympathetic to it. But yeah,
I don't know. All right, Danielle's family is watching BattleBots, which was pretty awesome to see. When she gets a call from Margo telling her that she'll be commanding the Mars mission instead of Ed. Looks like one of these Royal Rumble type matches of BattleBots. I think I saw Bombshell, Complete Control, and some other smaller bot. Didn't really stand a chance.
I love BattleBots and Robot Wars. I love the fact that Danielle and her whole family is watching it. It's just, it's super fucking wholesome. Yeah. And her family being supportive, but also very nervous. Like after they had that conversation, they thought that the danger was past, and it's a great scene.
Here's my question: in 100 years, when we have true artificial intelligence that can watch BattleBots, will they be disgusted by it? Will they be like, "You put my ancestors in a cage and made them fight each other to the death? Are you kidding me? That's fucking perverse." Or will they be smart enough to know that these were not actually thinking entities, that these were just remote controlled machines?
Do we get all upset about people eating monkeys? Except for like thinking it's gross, like in an Indiana Jones,
I think we get pretty upset. Kind of way. There's a lot of people who get upset about that, right? I mean, people get upset about eating all kinds of animals.
But because they're eating our ancestors, or just because this is like a barbaric thing to do because we're sentient creatures and they're sentient creatures, like, I don't know. Because,
yeah, I guess like, there's a distinction to be made, but probably both.
Because like, it'd be one thing, I guess, if we're still battling robots or sentient robots, but like, I don't know, 100 years from now, I feel like the robots, if they're going to get upset about it, it's not going to be because these, you disrespected our ancestors who couldn't really think.
And well, that's a pretty disrespectful impression of a robot. Oh, 100 years from now.
Aaron's just going to do a robot voice, beep, huh? Boop, oh, beep, yeah, okay. Yeah. That's how they all talk. Beep, boop, beep, boop. Right, white man? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right?
Right, flesh sack? Yeah, that's how we all sound.
Telling you, man, you're setting yourself up for a harsh judging 100 years from now.
Yeah, I'm gonna be one of the meat sacks hanging on a hook. I'm not gonna be down in the new system.
Anyway, yeah, good scene. Margo and Ed share a drink now and talk about everything they loved, including themselves, has now gone to hell. Yeah. Is it Margo and Ed? It's Molly and Ed.
Yeah, it's Molly and Ed. They're drinking.
My notes say Margo. I was like, that doesn't sound right at all.
Several times I got them confused in my notes too, but contextually. Yeah, they're probably drinking Glenfiddich if the earlier conversations in the episode holds any weight.
And then another really good scene, Aleta on the moon. She is just in awe of the whole experience. She's out kind of roving around out there. We're playing Smashing Pumpkins today, getting some period accurate music. Good to know in this universe, Smashing Pumpkins still hit the charts.
Yeah, I thought this was a great scene. This show does a really good job of nailing the awe of space. And like, I feel like Aleta would be just like me, like looking at the rocks and looking at the earth and like how amazing everything is. And they pull out and we see, like, Jonestown is a town now. Like, it's huge as compared to it was even from last season. It's got this whole radial spoke system, and it's just so much more developed than it was before. So I loved it.
A lot of little outposts with sort of makeshift embankments around them of the regolith that I thought was really cool.
Yeah, probably rocket test facilities and things like that.
Sure, landing zones, whatever, you know. It's, yeah. I think that's cool. So then Ed meets Danielle at the outpost, and Ed knows it's not her fault that he's off the mission, but he's still pretty salty about it. So salty, in fact, that he tells her she's only getting the command because she's a black woman. And Danielle is very hurt by that and leaves.
And she should be. The idea that her path to this point has been in any way greased compared to his is just on the face of it, like, fucking laughable.
And with all her experience and education and like for Ed, I had this line that she says where I've been hearing that my entire life, but I never thought I'd hear it from you.
Yeah.
The relationship they have should tell Ed that she's more than just a black woman in a spacesuit, right? Like,
yes.
She's put in the work. She's done everything that he has, and perhaps even more. And he still thinks this of her, you know, even if it's like he's just revealing himself here. Right. It's really gross.
And it's gross, and it's unfortunate, especially since And there, even before we got to that point, there was a whole bunch of other red flags, rotating red lights. Because like, I thought Danielle gave him a lot of slack. Like when he essentially said, I gave you your career. Like he did. Yeah, yeah. There's two or three times he said, I think that's pretty fucking offensive. You know, like, no, she put herself in a position to be the best and to be the most logical candidate time and time again. And even after she'd been looked over. Like, yeah, it's gross because, again, they showed that there was another sentiment that, like, Danielle could have come back with, like, oh, surprise, surprise, they picked the old white guy. And she fucking didn't do that to Ed and did nothing but, even though she was clearly hurt and felt passed over, say, I'm going to support you. And the fact that he couldn't be a little bit more gracious to her, again, egregious the way he's been treated. But... I even thought that not saying hi, Bob, had as much to do with him being butthurt about the assignment as it was the depressing yeah. state of the outpost turned into a family friendly establishment, completely sanitized and all the rough corners smoothed out.
It's like an Applebee's with a gift shop, an astronaut themed yeah. Applebee's with a gift shop.
And I get it. He also like there's also the element of like Danielle still got. You know, probably 10 years on him. So she's still got a uh-huh. viable career where this is maybe his last hurrah. But even I can't co-sign his behavior. He really, really showed his ass. And I wish, like I said, it makes me feel bad about the kind of pirate operation they're running over at Helios, because if Ed was not a dick in this scene, I'd be fully on board with like, yeah, fuck NASA, get him, Ed. But there's mm-hmm. still a tinge of I feel bad for Danny because she's being upstaged by this guy now.
Yeah. Yep, I'm with you. All right, Elaida calls home from the moon to talk with her son, who is more interested in watching DuckTales than talking to her.
That feels pretty realistic for his age.
Oh, you know? Totally. Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're on the moon, Mom. That's cool. Okay, now I'm going to go watch Uncle Scrooge.
Her father can't find his watch and leaves the call to go find it. You might be onto something with these memory issues, man. I didn't see it in the first episode, but this time they do it. They do it a couple times in this scene. He starts off with, "Where's my watch?" And then, or I'm looking for my watch or something. And then
it's just not. It's not just that. It's the agitation that's out of proportion to what's going on. That is like, right. I mean, I got big my granddad vibes from this. And it seems like it is going to be. But I'm like, but why? You know. Is it going to just be another thing that puts pressure on Alita that, you know, she's got apparent stability and she's got her dad back from Mexico and they're all this big, you know, extended nuclear unit and it's going to be taken from her?
And there's an element here, too, of what's her husband's name?
Victor.
Victor. There's an element, too, of Victor not liking her father. Right. She mentioned something about like, I know you guys don't get along or something.
Yeah,
or he says maybe Victor doesn't like
because he's a little bit more too old fashioned, or if he just keeps cooking with cheese and you're, you know, lactose intolerant, that might be a reason enough. But
that's enough.
And it could also just be that because it's really frustrating to deal with people who are losing their grip, man. Older people who are starting to get some sort of senility or dementia. I imagine like being a young guy trying to raise a kid with a woman with a hard charging career and her dad's there and he's always fucking shit up and not respect, you know, not remembering things. It'd be hard to not take it personal if you didn't know what was going on.
Yeah. I do wonder how that's going to come back into it.
Even knowing what's going on, it's sometimes hard not to take it personal when you get like to some of the extreme behavior you get. So I wonder, because it seems like this season is going to take place over at least the course of a few years.
Probably.
Seems like they're going to develop this plot a bit, and it's not something I feel great about, because again, it's kind of a painful storyline for myself, but I'll be interested to see what they actually do with it.
All right, Karen sees Ellen's choice of Bragg as her VP. On the news, and then there's a car crash outside her house. I thought it was going to be Danny, but it turns out to be Ed.
Me too.
Ed is very drunk.
already starting his shit. Turns out it's the other man in her life that's fucking shit up all the time.
Well, it's both of them. Danny's also sitting outside in his car spying on them.
That was the greatest part after it's like, it turns out it's all just drunk Ed pissed and not knowing what else to do with himself. And they're like, well, Jesus Christ, at least it's not Danny. Danny's just up the street watching everything with like whatever his psycho American psycho look is.
This was not his Corvette, right? This is his new roadster type car.
Yeah, because he said Dan's damn toys, damn toy car.
Shit.
Yeah.
All right. Inside, Ed and Karen commiserate over their dreams coming to an unfulfilling end and wonder what their lives would have been like without each other. He confesses that he once considered being a civil engineer instead of an astronaut, but didn't want to let her down. He thought it might be nice to build something that lasts.
He's in complete denial, though, right? Like,
oh, yeah. About the importance of his achievements.
Well, not only that, well, yeah, there's multiple levels of delusion, but I'm saying him being an astronaut is still 90% him. Like, there might be a little bit of like, well, you know, my wife will be disappointed if I don't make it. But like, I felt that, and I felt like they showed Karen's face when he was talking about this as if that was kind of a slap to her, too, because I think that Karen would have preferred him being a civil engineer, all said and done.
Probably, yeah. A lot less stress on her.
A lot less stress, danger. But then the fact that like he threw kind of almost blamed her for it. Like, well, the only reason I was an astronaut was to make you happy. I think that's going to have repercussions as the series unfolds.
Yeah. I mean, that's stupid, right? He wanted to fly. He's a test pilot. Come on. I think this is also about losing their son. You know, this idea of like, I wanted to build something that lasts, that could have been their son, but their son died tragically early. And he probably feels underneath it, he wouldn't like acknowledge it, but he probably feels a big sense of loss from that.
It's also delusional that this guy thinks that his entire career is just a shoebox of memories, because he's still the first American that landed on the moon, right? First commander of a moon base, first pilot of a nuclear fusion craft. Like, he has been, right? He has left his mark on history.
Three, like, absolutely. There are a lot of fucking things he's achieved.
He put down a Sally Ride-led mutiny. Like, he's there's been space pirate. Yeah, he's put his mark, but it just goes to show. Like, I just 2 weeks ago, I came across this this account by Neil Gaiman. He tells a story of him being at this like I don't know, top 100 intellectual achievers kind of like banquet kind of thing event. And one of the ones there is Neil Armstrong, and he struck up a conversation, and Mr. Armstrong said, you know, every time I get to one of these things, I always think, what the hell am I doing here? I've got all these great people, and then there's me. And this dude who landed on the moon...
It's because he fucked up his...
He landed on the moon with 10 seconds speech. Of fuel left, by the way. By the way. His pulse is jacked over 200 and he's still talking cool as a cucumber. He thinks that he's a fraud because he doesn't. But it just goes to show how people get warped views both ways. Like, you get the megalomaniacs who think way too highly of themselves, and you have truly exceptional people who get in a crowd of other exceptional people and shrink because, you know.
That's just expectations and ambition, and those things are very complicated. Especially, I think, as you get to Ed's age, right, where you're starting to, you can see the horizon shrinking for potentially creating new world-changing events and being part of those.
Yeah.
All right, Karen visits Helios, and it is unlike most companies she's familiar with. In a lot of ways, there's an open office plan. There's no hierarchical structure to the employment. She pitches Iessa on making Ed the commander of the Helios mission to Mars, and Iessa huddles up with his entire company to talk it through. And they you know, go back and forth about why he might not be the right guy, why he is. Eventually, they vote, and Ed gets the position. Karen also gets a job offer doing whatever she wants, kind of, or more specifically what she was doing at Polaris. And she's unsure about it.
Headhunting, poaching astronauts from NASA.
There's a lot to talk about here, down to like the structure of this company, the technologies they're using. They mentioned 3D printing at the beginning of this scene to do all their testing stuff, and I thought that was really cool. That's way ahead. I know industrial 3D printing has been a thing for much longer than, you know, home 3D printing, consumer 3D printing, but I still think this is pretty early, 92.
What did you think of it? Because, like, I was like, my first watch, so I'm like, wow, this is amazing. It's just completely flat, no power structure. The other thing I thought is, like, my second thought was, is this a viable way to run a company? This is right. like a big decision, and it's made in a snap manner. You mentioned, like, hearing out all sides. The people just shouted objections and support from the back, and, like, there was no back and forth or debate. It was just kind of like, and then the guy who owns the company happens to support the majority vote.
Right.
So, like, what would happen if they're like, you know what? Fuck this Ed guy. We actually don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, this is the TV version of this, right? I mean, the real version of this is he calls a company meeting, he hears arguments, they create a document that then is read by everyone to follow into the next meeting that they have where they actually do the vote. It's a much longer process, but this is for television, so they shortened it.
It's the West Wingification of, like, a democratic co-op. But the fact that they're showing something like that at this level is pretty incredible and aspirational. Again, I like, this should be a stand-in for an actual process that is deliberate and thoughtful. And
the other thing I love about this is I'm really digging IS's action speak louder sort of approach to everything. Because Karen comes in here with, like, you know, some objections about how they do things, and he's just like, well, when we get to Mars, they'll see that we're serious. You know, like, when this mission succeeds, the news will turn with us because we've done the damn thing. Instead of getting caught up in, like, all the politics of it, I love it.
Yeah, there's a saying, like, if you don't have steak, sell the sizzle. Well, he's got the steak and he knows it, so we don't give a shit about the sizzle. Like, you know, people will be blown away when we show up in Mars orbit and set up a colony. I don't need to get people dreamed and inspired and drummed up and all.
And it's in stark contrast to NASA. I mean, NASA has to have the political backing of the public and the people in office, and without it, they're dead in the water. So,
yeah,
it's a different way to play ball.
I do wonder if the government's just going to let them go to space. Is there going to be, like, sudden amount of red tape of, like, well, because there's talk about
regulation.
Because the show does this very well. There's background information about, like, Polaris being a problem for NASA, because apparently there's a NASA certification of spaceworthiness that, you know, there's questions about and being able to do safety and there's oversight. So NASA could use the Polaris thing as a pretext of, like, whoa, 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 you want to take the 94 launch window? Well, you're going to have to prove this and this, and this hotel almost killed a bunch of people, and it's your spacecraft. I wonder if there's going to be a little bit of Uncle Sam putting their it's his big fat thumb on one side of the scale to try to fuck with. And how will that change? In the real world,
that would be part of the equation, that IS would have to deal with.
I think it's going to be in this world, too, because I feel like IESA just smokes the United States and Russia if there's no interference.
Right.
You know?
Right. Not very compelling drama if you're there 2 years early. All right. And finally, Margo and Danielle meet about the Mars mission to go over the crew list. She sees that Ed's daughter is on the list, and she may or may not be interested in that. But one of the people she is interested in having on her team is Danny. Margo's assistants tell her, hey, you need to turn on the TV. And when she does, she sees IESA and Karen, who has apparently accepted the job offer, announcing the Helios mission to Mars with the brand new ship Phoenix, which is the, you know, cobbled together
rising Polaris from the ashes engines. Of Polaris, you would say.
And Ed Baldwin's command of that mission. And there's more. Not only is all that true, but they're also going to go there 2 years before NASA. And it just takes everyone completely by surprise.
It is a little shitty that Ed didn't tell Kelly. You know?
Yes. Especially because she's going to quit her job over this. He needs to that needs to be his first phone call is, by the way, as soon as he knows he's not the commander of the NASA mission, he needs to call her up and say, by the way, I'm not going on this mission, so you're not going on this mission.
But I might be going on this.
Don't quit your day job, kid.
Yeah, although I wonder if she, like, I wonder if she go, because it seems like there's a lot of dramatic possibility of setting her and Danny on the same ship and program, because then it's like, when is Danny going to say, Sure. I don't think he'll be attracted to Kelly, but I think it's going to be like, it's like something that's eating him up and causing him to maybe drink and do that. And like this secret that he can't tell her, right? His best. And they established that they're very good friends too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And they did similar stuff in the previous season, right? Like,
yeah,
there were secrets going to space.
Yeah. So I wonder if they're setting that up, that, Danielle and Margot are going to maybe even play up the fact that Ed Baldwin's daughter's doing it the right way through NASA versus him trying to skip the line and cut ahead into the private sector. Yeah.
I'm just worried about how recklessly ambitious this mission is going to be. They have a cowboy commander who's, like I said, probably willing to cut some corners. They've got an entrepreneur who is very much interested in getting there first. They've got a ship that is tested under certain circumstances, but untested as a ship.
And it's going to be an automated milk run. That's the thing that, like, I don't know that Ed's a good fit in the culture and the mission, because they're going to want a guy who kind of lays back and lets a computer do things for him. And he's going to want to be hand on stick, you know?
And I also think engineers how that saying, works. This is going to be a milk run, is setting themselves up for a big failure. You know, if they think this is going to be easy,
that's like, he's going to have to fight that culture of like, well, we're going to do everything automated versus like, well, you got to let the pilots, you know, be a pilot. I wonder, because like also like Ed very much believes in a hierarchy. He comes from a world that's very hierarchical and regimented. Mm-hmm. And he's going into a culture that is completely flat and decentralized. And is he going to be able to thrive in that set aside the mission parameters? How is he going to fit in within the culture of Helios? I bet there'll be fireworks.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, new competition, right? There's competition everywhere. We still haven't seen how the Russian stuff is going to be a big competition. Like you said, the political angle, they need to get involved at this point to make it more dramatic. Yeah, I fully expect this not to go as planned in 1994. That seems crazy, but we'll see how it goes.
And then final shot of Molly in the tub. Way to go, Ed, stick it to the bastards. Yeah. I laughed so hard with that hammer.
Uh-huh.
Ah, good episode. Of course, we're recording this early. This is the last episode we'll see together before the first episode drops to the world. But it's certainly before we could get any feedback for it. So as we said before, if there is no feedback in this podcast, it's probably because we didn't get enough, or we might do a midweek episode for Hi Bob later on. Or we might hold it for a future episode and wait till a little bit builds up and then consider it all at the end. But if you're interested in letting us know what you think about this brand new space race, 3, maybe a 4-player event, send it in to FAM, that stands for All Mankind, FAM@baldmove.com. We'll be back next week with the third episode, where hopefully we get some answers about how Ed fits into the culture, what's going to happen to Kelly, is Margo going to continue her power mad takeover of NASA? Is this Dev Ayessa as cool as we think he is? Is Governor Bragg as cool as he's purporting to be? Mm-hmm. We'll find out next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.